I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going on, everybody? Justin Morgenstein back with you on another edition of Phillies Today. And I left you last week on a high note. Then they go on and have a great series at home against the Mets, feeling good going into Houston, and within three games, crushed once again. So, Phil's scoreless drought for 27 innings down in Houston this week and was ultimately a miserable series as they get swept against the Astros. As we hit the halfway point of the year, 81 games in to the 2025 Major League Baseball season, and the Phils sit in a tie for first place in the National League East now, with the Mets playing later tonight. We'll see how that goes, at 47-34. And like I said, it was a frustrating series because we'll get to it in a minute, but just some dominant pitching performances from Ranger Suarez, from Zach Wheeler, and from Christopher Sanchez today, and you get nothing to show for it, which is very frustrating because, as we've touched on a million times, the strength of this ball club is its starting pitching, and you're going to have to win games based off of that. But at some point, like, you got to score some runs, and anytime you have a 27-inning drought, and it's not going to be good. And they were in danger of getting swept and shut out for the first time since 2010, and just some pretty ugly baseball down there in Houston. And we'll just get right into the lineup, but of course, we'll get to some bullpen notes, some starter notes, get into some deadline stuff as well before we preview the series down in Atlanta against the Braves this weekend. So, just with the lineup, horrific series with men on base. And it started the other night on Monday when they were on Tuesday when they weren't able to get any run support for Ranger Suarez. Then you have the following night where it seems like they stranded guys left and right, and then they're not even able to get guys in a scoring position as we get into Thursday here, which was massively, massively frustrating. And I think they only had one extra base hit on Wednesday night as well with the Edmundo Sosa double. So just brutal stuff there. And I think a lot of it is just trying to do a little too much, especially with Bryce Harper out. And we will get to a Bryce Harper update in just a second here. But just a lot of overswinging, it felt like, and trying to do too much. I think guys like Schwarber, guys like Trey Turner, guys like Nick Castellanos, who struggled in this series after, being on a pretty good roll as the Mets series passed along. It just felt like they were trying to create too much offense just on their own rather than sort of passing the baton and putting together good at-bats and taking some pitches there as well. So, I don't mean to single out Nick here, and it's obviously something that has been a problem in the past, but that last at-bat from Nick Castellanos today with the two sliders and away and then just a fastball right down the middle to strike out on three pitches against Brian Abreu to close out that series was just, it personified the entire 3 days down there in Houston, which were just absolutely miserable from an offensive standpoint. But the Phillies offense could be getting some relief as we get into, I would say, next week here potentially, as a little Bryce Harper update today, a good Bryce Harper update. Matt Gill from The Athletic said he's progressing nicely, could return as early as Monday. He took 75 swings off of a high-velocity pitching machine today, so that's good to see. But I don't want this to be something where Bryce Harper is rushing back just because the lineup isn't producing, because it's an injury where you don't even exactly know what the injury is. It's sort of just symptoms. Like, a sore wrist isn't an injury. It's more of just, something that hurts, and obviously it dates back to last year, so there's something you hope not chronic there, but clearly something that's been lingering for a long, long time. And I don't want Bryce Harper to have to rush back into this lineup and try to be the hero here, as we actually today hit the official halfway marker of Bryce Harper's contract, which is pretty unbelievable to think about. We are halfway through the season in the sixth year of his contract, which means we're 6.5 in on a 13-year deal. So today was actually the halfway mark of the Bryce Harper contract, which is pretty amazing. And I don't want him rushing back just because he feels like he needs to, start carrying this lineup and be the guy who turns things around for this team. So great if he feels healthy. I would love to see him back as early as next week, potentially, as you know, Matt Gelb stated and a bunch of the reporters down in Houston said today. But at the same time, I don't want him to, you know, have his timing off, and obviously you don't want the wrist hurting as well. So it's something to monitor for sure, but at the same time, this lineup could really use them back because they struggled big time in this series after, again, what was pretty encouraging last week when they were down in Miami and against the Mets over the weekend. So Bryce Harper on the way back soon, that could be good. And I will say, bottom of the lineup, as well as they did last week, it just, I flip-flopped too much with these guys. Like Brandon Marsh, who has had a really, really good couple of months since his, what, under 100 start for what was the first month of the season. Like, just a frustrating series for him as well, even though he was able to finally drive in the run on a good at-bat today that the Phillies needed, and ultimately they didn't end up winning the game. But put together a good at-bat there, and I don't want to see any more Johan Rojas. I'm officially, I think, at that stage. I've said it over the course of the past few weeks, but that at-bat the other night against Hader, when he was up 2-0 and you got to get Trey Turner to the plate, like, what are we doing? And I don't know if that's a Rob Thompson thing or if that's just a miscommunication between the bench, the third base coach, and Johan Rojas, but you're a big league hitter. I don't care if you're Johan Rojas. I don't care if you're, you know, Buddy Kennedy. I don't care whoever you are. You have to take that 2-0 pitch right there to get Trey Turner to the plate, who has a couple of extra base hits in his career against Josh Hader. It was just so incredibly frustrating for that to happen. It just feels like I'm done with the offensive player that Johan Rojas is. Just let Brandon Marsh hit against lefties at this point. He's proven over the past couple of months, at least, that he is, I guess, a fine enough offensive player to where he can, you know, have that opportunity against left-handed pitchers. And he has actually done pretty well against righties in the past couple of months since that rough start. But the Johan Rojas thing, I'm just so over it at this point. And I wouldn't have a problem with Brandon Marsh being in the lineup every day, especially if you had a non-platoon left fielder in Max Kepler. Like, Max Kepler, it's great. He can run into a couple of home runs every here and there. But the fact is, you sign this guy for 1 year to be your everyday starting left fielder. And in a situation the other night where you have Buddy Kennedy and Johan Rojas up, the fact that you can't feel comfortable putting in Kepler or putting in a Bryson Stott, or there was one other left-hander on the bench who is just eluding me right now. Oh, Brandon Marsh was on the bench as well. Like, the fact that you don't feel comfortable putting in any of those guys against Josh Hader, who, granted, small sample size this year, but doesn't have unbelievable numbers against left-handed hitters. Like, that was something I didn't really understand from Rob Thompson. And I would have really liked to see anybody go up there aside from those couple of guys. And Otto Kemp didn't have the greatest at-bat to begin that inning either. So, rough series from the lineup, that was for sure. But the total opposite can be said about the starting pitching, because that was essentially flawless. You have Ranger on Tuesday night pitching an absolute gem. Just what Ranger's been able to do since he's come back from injury has been really remarkable. And he is just a quality start machine for them right now. I think that's 8 or 9 straight that he's had since his first start against the Diamondbacks when he came back. And he is just hitting his spots really efficiently, mixing his pitches incredibly well. The changeup has been phenomenal. And it was really tough to see Cooper Hummel, or whatever that guy's name is, take him deep, takes the 1-0 lead. The offense clearly did nothing. And they lose that game 1-0 after Ranger pitches what was really a gem, 7-plus innings of really, really impressive baseball the other night from Ranger Suarez. So that was great from him. Zach Wheeler didn't have his best start, I would say, on Wednesday night. But at the same time, he was Zach Wheeler when he didn't have his best stuff. He still competed and threw, you know, 6 innings of 1-run ball, which you will take, you know, pretty much from most other pitchers 10 out of 10 times. But it was, you know, not up to par for Zach Wheeler standards. But he still puts them in a spot to win the game. But then, Matt Strom lets up the home run to Carantini, and they lose 2-0. So another great pitching performance there, or one that you'll at least take pretty much every time. And then today, Christopher Sanchez, 11 strikeouts, and again, like Ranger, utilized his repertoire really well. His changeup has just been filthy. He's been one of the best pitchers in the National League this year, and to me, if they were starting a playoff series tomorrow, it would be no question who my Game 2 starter would be, and that would be Christopher Sanchez, because he's been absolutely lights out. Just another great performance today, as, you know, again, gives up 1 run and can't find a way to get a win. So Great stuff from the, and you can even go back to Sunday night in Jesus Luzardo, who was awesome against the Mets on Sunday Night Baseball in his first iteration of the Phillies-Mets rivalry. And he was really impressive, too. It was a good bounce-back start from him from what was sort of an iffy outing down in Miami last week. And he's been really good, too, ever since sort of those two blow-up outings against the Brewers and the Blue Jays there again. That start down in Miami wasn't great, but wasn't terrible either. So good to see Luzardo bounce back a little bit. And the last guy I got to mention, and he's the guy who's going to be starting on Friday night with the chance to, you know, help this team bounce back, is Mick Abel. And I'm starting to worry a little bit about Mick Abel. And I had concerns sort of even though he's pitching well to begin his major league career. But the fastball just seems really straight, doesn't move a whole lot, and gave up, what was it, 4 solo home runs to the Mets on Saturday night. And you hope, because obviously he can be a trade piece potentially for them at the deadline. And the fact that he's, you know, a former first-round pick and you want him to be able to contribute and you want him to pitch well, I'm starting to worry that he might be getting overexposed a little bit. And I will get to some Dave Dombrowski comments eventually about what he feels the rotation will play out as the season goes along here and what will end up happening with Mick Abel if he, you know, remains on the team and isn't traded. But I start to worry that, you know, with Aaron Nola being out for an extended period of time, probably until mid-August, I would say, and Andrew Painter, who, again, I still have high hopes for, but doesn't seem like he's progressing this year on the track that they would have hoped, because right about now is sort of the time where I thought he'd be coming up, and it feels like we still might be a month or so away from that. And he's had a couple rough outings down in Lehigh Valley, but had a bounce back start in his last appearance. So I worry that Mick Abel might be overexposed a little bit. And it sort of seems like while the fastball is good and the velocity's there, it's A, straight, and B, the breaking stuff is sort of, you know, get me over and just hoping that it works out for him. So that's where I'm at with the rotation. Overall, just really, really, really good stuff from the starting pitching on this baseball team right now. So last thing before I get into some of those Dombrowski comments I was just alluding to is bullpen still looking pretty rough. And the Alvarado injury, I think we realized it at the time, but the bullpen sort of had a nice little run after. Alvarado suspension, I should say. It was sort of a good bullpen run following the 80-game suspension, but I think we knew sooner or later that this was sort of going to be a situation where they were going to be short arms, and now you're really seeing that, because even in a game like today, and he got the job done, I'll give him credit, but you bring Max Lazar in after the leadoff double in the seventh, get Christopher Sanchez, and that's a guy trying to protect a 1-0 lead for you, and he was in Lehigh Valley like 3 weeks ago, so just not a ton of arms you trust in that bullpen right now. Kirkering is clearly the guy and probably the closer for the foreseeable future right now. Gave up his first earned run in like 2 months today because, of course, and right after they finally get on the board there with the Marsh sack fly, which, of course, is just frustrating. And won't fault Kirkering too much, even though you don't want to hit the batter to begin that little rally there. And then Altuve gets the hit. And ultimately, that run comes in to score on the Cam Smith hit.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1. On the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
But besides Kirkering right now, there's not much that you really trust. And Strom's been pretty brutal again. I said, let up that kind of backbreaking home run on Wednesday night to Victor Caratini there. And he just doesn't have that same sort of pop that he does last year. The velocity's sort of the same, but it doesn't seem like the ball has that jump that it did when he was an all-star in 2024. And deception is the thing he relies on, but he's just not very deceptive right now. And it really doesn't matter if it's left-handers, right-handers. He's not getting a lot of guys out. And that's your second option and your first left-handed option to the bullpen right now. And behind him, you got the Tanner Banks of the world, the Joe Rosses of the world, Mercado. Like, all these guys are just pretty rough watches right now. So kind of brutal with the state of the bullpen right now. At the deadline, you really hope that you go after a couple of arms, but I'm going to sort of transition into what Dave Dombrowski said on Jason Stark's podcast. And it might seem like they may be in the market just to get a bunch of bullpen arms at the deadline. And I'll explain that right now, because when Dave Dombrowski went on with Jason Stark on his podcast, the Starkville podcast, which definitely a good listen, I recommend to anybody who wants to find out more information on this stuff, go and take a listen to it. But when he asked him sort of what's your priority at the deadline and bullpen was mentioned, he talked about how he is going to rely on some of these starters at the trade deadline to sort or beyond the trade deadline and as they get towards the postseason to be, I guess, major bullpen contributors. And Mick Abel would definitely be one of those guys. And Dombrowski, when he spoke to Jason Stark, said that in 2018 when he was with the Red Sox and their bullpen sort of needed help, that this is the way that they went, and that Alex Cora did a really good job of sort of managing that. And everyone can remember guys like David Price and Nathan Eovaldi, them going to the bullpen and really being key contributors for that Red Sox team. And I believe Chris Sale actually was the guy who ended up clinching that World Series against the Dodgers in 2018 for the Red Sox. And I think that is an okay strategy, but at the same time, you still have to get to the postseason. You have a division race here that you're trying to win. And I understand that high leverage relievers are going to be very costly at the deadline. And I'm not saying, you know, trade Painter and trade Miller for those guys, but if you have to let a Crawford go, or if you have to let even a Mick Abel go to try to bring in an established arm in the bullpen that's able to, you know, be a lockdown guy for you in the eighth or ninth inning, then I'm sorry. I understand that you want to keep this window open for as long as you can, but you got to make that move. And I don't know if that's a Dave Dombrowski thought process or if that's even a John Middleton process, because I go back to the trade deadline last year and what John Middleton sort of spoke about. I forget who did the interview with him. It's just eluding me right now. But I think the 2012 to 2018 era sort of scared him when the Phillies went into irrelevancy and they had, you know, a lot of teams that just were really non-competitive because the farm system got drained so much during that run. So I wonder if Dombrowski is sort of getting messages from ownership that we want to keep this team as competitive as we can for a long time, because eventually, ultimately, that's what keeps butts in the seats. And this is a business at the end of the day. And as much as I believe that John Middleton wants to go out there and win the World Series, he's clearly talked about it many times before about getting his trophy back. I think that mathematically, you think to yourself, okay, if they have as many cracks at this thing as possible over the course of the next 5 to 10 years, eventually they're going to go on a run in a postseason where they're going to get hot, they're going to catch fire, and they're going to win one. And while that isn't probably the most competitive mentality to have and probably the one that fans would agree with the most, I think it's one, and as an owner, that I understand a little bit. And they finally are in a place where the farm system is, you know, has plentiful guys that can potentially be cornerstone pieces in the future between Miller, Painter, Arun Escobar, Tait. A lot of these guys are players who ownership and management thinks that can be real, you know, guys for this team in the future. So I think they're in an interesting spot with that at the deadline, and I'm be very, very interested to see how aggressive they are. Because if they're not aggressive, I will say, like, fans are going to be ticked off and people are going to be mad, because if they're in first place again at the trade deadline and they have another Tanner Banks, Estevez sort of deadline, people are going to be rightly annoyed. And I think that this is a team that is worth going, not all in for, but trading everybody, but it's worth giving up a couple of good pieces for. So I'll be very curious to see as we get closer and closer to the deadline what the names are that comes out that they're interested in. There have been a few between, you know, there's Cedric Mullins out there, there's Jaron Duran, there's Chapman, there's Felix Bautista. There's a bunch of relievers and outfielders that have been discussed nationally for the Phillies. But I think the right-handed bat and the at least one to two bullpen pieces are sort of what everyone's going to be looking for here as the trade deadline gets a little closer. So those are pretty much the notes I have from that podcast with Jason Stark. A couple more I will say before we get on to the weekend preview is Bryce Harper has talked, of course, with management about what he believes the Phillies need, and he has expressed to management that he would be willing to move to the outfield if it was presented that a first baseman was available and they wanted to go pursue a first baseman. But Dave Dombrowski said in that interview that he'd prefer not to do that. And the funny thing is, he said, you know, defense really matters to us, and it's something that you can't just ignore. But I feel like that's something that Dave Dombrowski has essentially done for his entire, you know, career, and has kind of prioritized the bats and said, okay, we'll put these pieces defensively where we see fit. And I just thought it was interesting that he said that, because that's not really the mentality that he's had throughout his general managing history. And it's good to know that Bryce would be able to do that, though. He also might be Dombrowski protecting Bryce a little bit there from his own good. So also just talked about Schwarber and Ranger and free agency this offseason, and just how it's going to be hard to keep both. And I think, assuming that Ranger has a good rest of the season and stays healthy, it's going to be an interesting debate in the offseason, no matter how this year ends up playing out, who you end up keeping between those two guys, because both of them are just so incredibly valuable for you. And I know Schwarber hasn't had the June that he's typically had throughout his career, but what he's done for this baseball team, this lineup over the past few years, has been just unbelievable. And at the end of the day, he's a winner. Like, he has made the playoffs every year of his career, and has been sort of the backbone of this lineup along with Bryce throughout his Phillies tenure so far. So again, just those are the notes from that podcast. I would definitely recommend listening to it if you want to find out a little more there. And before we get out of here, let's get to a little weekend preview where hopefully the Phillies can bounce back a little, because visually, like aesthetically, that was one of the most frustrating series I can ever remember watching. It just felt like there were no extra base hits. There was no traffic on the base pads even in the last couple of games. The first game, it was they couldn't get a runner scoring position home. But the last couple of nights, it was like, man, could we even get a guy scoring position? So frustrating stuff, but they head to Atlanta for three. And hey, Atlanta is not out of this thing. Like, they are within, I believe, 5 games of the wild card and less than 10 games in the division. So this is one of those series where you say, you know, maybe you could bury the Braves in the division and put them out of, you know, reach for good. But it's not going to be easy, because the Braves have definitely been playing some better baseball lately, and led by Ronald Acuna, who, man, ever since Acuna came back from injury, he's hitting like .400 and just been on a tear for the Braves. So that'll be something to look out for. But Friday night, mentioned that Mick Abel will be starting against Bryce Elder, two guys who, young guys, who have really struggled throughout you know, the course of the past month or so. And Bryce Elder, always a guy who's tries to pitch to contact and likes to get a lot of ground balls. And hopefully the Phillies can take advantage of him, because he leaves a lot of stuff in the zone. And the Phillies were aggressive down there in Houston, I will say. So hopefully Elder leaves a lot of balls in the zone and they're able to take advantage of that there. Again, Abel versus Bryce Elder on Friday night. Then on Saturday night, Luzardo tries to, you know, build off of that really, really impressive start on Sunday Night Baseball against the Mets. He'll be going against Phillies killer Spencer Schwellenbach, who has just been absolutely dominant in his time against the Phillies over the last couple of years. I mean, he's got a 2-0 record, a 2-2 ERA, and 22 strikeouts in 4 appearances against the Phillies since the beginning of last season. And he's a really good pitcher, man. He is athletic. He's a former shortstop, almost like DeGrom in that sense, high velocity, and definitely a talented starter who should be in all-star consideration down there in Atlanta. And again, he'll go up against Ranger, another national TV game on Saturday night. And then Sunday at 1:35, you will have Ranger Suarez against Spencer Strider, our favorite down there. As again, Phillies have dominated Spencer Strider in the postseason, but during the regular season, Spencer Strider has really shut the Phillies down over the course of his career. So that'll be another tough task. So they're facing two very good pitchers down there in Atlanta this weekend, and hopefully they can win a series and bounce back, because they definitely have a little bit of a gauntlet they're in the middle of right now. As they were just in Houston before faced the Mets, who are another team over .500. And after Atlanta, they are at home against the Padres, and then at home against the Reds, who have been much hotter as of late, at the Giants, who have been pretty good, and Padres again. So it's a little bit of a gauntlet schedule for the Phillies coming up, who they just need to stay in it here. Luckily, the Mets have been cold, so that has helped their cause there as well. But again, need a little bit of a bounce back down in Atlanta this weekend. So that'll wrap it up for this edition of Phillies Today. Thank you, as always, for tuning into the program. And for Phillies 24/7, this has been Justin Morgenstern. We'll talk next week. See ya.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EAR-POD-1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.